Well, hello, friends. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Liz, and I'm so glad you can join me for day two of our travel article of the month. Now, with me in the studio, I have Lois and Campbell. Hi, guys.
Hi.
All right. So glad you guys could join me for day two here. And what have we been talking about, Lois?
Well, we've been talking about a great capital city called Madrid. This is found in Spain.
That's right. And the title of the article is, Campbell?
Mad About Madrid.
Okay. Now, what's so interesting about this article is it's actually the record of the writer's 24-hour stay. The writer had 24 hours, and he wrote down what he did. And so far, we've covered day one. And let's quickly go over, what did the writer talk about?
Well, he is a very descriptive writer, so we start off the article talking about different sounds that you hear in Madrid. We hear the clink of the coffee cups and the clatter of the horse hooves and children laughing. Mm-hmm. And then we talk a little bit about the architecture that we see and just how the different culture that you experience there in Madrid. And the writer starts his journey at the Plaza Mayor. Mm-hmm. And this is a large main square in Madrid, and it's a center for a lot of different activity. We see fiestas and markets and religious ceremonies and other performances, and both locals and tourists like to visit this place, and mm-hmm. so you'll see many different types of people in that place, from artists to musicians. And then he enters into a little area which is called the Calle Mayor, mm-hmm. and this is kind of a little alleyway where there is there are peddlers and vendors selling different souvenirs and different foods.
Okay. And then from the Calle Mayor, we venture into Puerta del Sol, and that's where we're going to begin today's adventure.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so far, we've covered a lot of description already. It sounds like Madrid is quite a fascinating place, but the writer did mention that when it comes to traveling and touring through Europe, Madrid, for some reason, isn't always top of the list.
When it kind of gets ignored, right, Liz?
Right. So what other places in Spain get covered more?
Right.
We have like
Barcelona,
right?
Costa del Sol.
Right.
Seville.
Yeah.
Right. These other places around Spain, for some reason, get more hits. More people like to go there for whatever reason. But the writer is trying to give Madrid a chance here.
Exactly. Right. He is. And I think with talking about fiestas and siestas and then talking about drinks and food and back to drinks, I think we'll have everybody going to Madrid.
And in the meantime, while we're reading this article, we're not only learning English, I feel like we're learning Spanish as well, too.
So, yes, a lot of vocabulary and a lot of Spanish going on in today's article and for tomorrow as well. So, friends, if you have a copy of March Advance magazine, we are now on page 15. This is day two of our travel article, Mad About Madrid. And we hope you'll follow along with today's reading. We're just going to cover the first two paragraphs of the first column.
The semicircular square is the national ground zero and a must-see for any Madrid visitor. In an ironic twist that is both characteristically and endearingly Spanish, the Sun Square is cast in shadow by the City Hall clock tower, providing a welcome shield from the heat that has by now become nearly unbearable. Not wanting to test my luck against a temperature of 120 degrees, I walk down to the Paseo del Prado, a grand Victorian boulevard flanked by world-renowned museums. I purchase a general admission ticket for 14 euros and wander the air-conditioned galleries of Velázquez's, Goya's, Rubens, and Tintoretto's until lunchtime.
Thank you, Brandon, for helping us with the reading. Okay, we begin at Puerta del Sol, and it is a square, described as what shape?
Semicircular. So when we talk about something that's circular, that means it's round, it's a circle. A semicircle is kind of half, so it's a half a circle.
Okay, so when I can remember certain teachers would give instructions to students to sit in a semicircle.
It's like you're looking out at something. I think that's why the square, which isn't a square, would be shaped that way.
And this is a place described as the National Ground Zero. What's Ground Zero?
Yeah, Ground Zero here is, it's in our vocabulary focus. I just want to be clear. We sometimes think of it only as New York City and Ground Zero, but here it explains the place to begin some activity or the center of intense change.
Okay. Now, this place is also described as a must-see for any Madrid visitor. Must-see.
When it's a must-see, that means you must see it.
And that's why it's described as a must-see.
So a priority, right?
Right. Yes. So if you go somewhere and you don't go to this must-see, people might get mad at you.
Mm-hmm.
What is wrong with you? You know, you didn't go see that place? So if you're visiting Madrid, you must go to Puerta del Sol. Now, I read somewhere that first of all, Puerta del Sol, let's look at the name itself. Puerta is kind of like the word port, okay, or gate, okay. And sol means sun. That's how we have words like solar power, solar energy. So sol means sun, so gate of the sun. The reason why this place is called Puerta del Sol is because once upon a time, it was part of the city wall, and it was the gate. There was a gate there, and the sun would shine right through it. And so that's why it's called Puerta del Sol. But interestingly enough, we see in line 3, though, there is now an ironic twist. What is it, Campbell?
Well, something that's an ironic twist, it's just interesting. It's kind of like something you don't expect. So the ironic twist here is both characteristically and endearingly Spanish. So the sun square, the square that is supposed to be where the sun shines, has a large shadow over it, which is cast by the City Hall clock tower.
Ironic. So an ironic twist is normally something should be happening a certain way, but interestingly enough, something else happened, maybe like an interruption or just things kind of did a U-turn. And in this case now, it's more like a shadow square because of a clock tower that got built later on. Now, this description, or this, actually not description, but this whole situation of having this shadow cast by City Hall clock tower is described as characteristically and endearingly Spanish. Now, characteristically would mean it's normal, it's typical, it's a quality that is belonging to the subject. But endearing, Campbell.
When something is endearing, it's sweet. It makes you feel warm and fuzzy.
It's kind of cute.
Yeah.
So because of this ironic situation where the square is supposed to be sunny is now got a shadow.
Yes.
But it's not a bad thing. Why is it, Lois?
Well, it's not a bad thing because we have the City Hall clock tower providing a welcome shield from the heat that has by now become nearly unbearable.
Okay.
Nearly unbearable means you can't take it, and you probably really can't take it at high noon.
Right, and it's not even noon yet.
It's still morning.
Yes,
yeah.
That's right.
And he's already feeling uncomfortable. So we move on to the next paragraph. Not wanting to test my luck against a temperature of how many degrees, Campbell?
120 degrees.
And that's Fahrenheit. Mm-hmm. And Celsius, centigrade, that would be 49.
Yes, that is a hot morning.
Very hot. Okay, so he doesn't want to test his luck. What does it mean to test someone's luck?
When someone tests their luck, it just means you want to try and see, you know, see if something might happen, you know, and see if, you know, you want to, a student might test their luck by not studying for a test and just see, well, you know, let's see what happens, see if I can do well.
Right.
You might test your luck by forgetting to buy a hat and a brightly painted hand fan that might be helping you out that was mentioned in day one of this talk on Madrid.
Yes.
Or, you know, if you see that it's cloudy, you might test your luck and say, ah, I don't want to bring an umbrella with
mm-hmm.
me.
So when you want to just go ahead and do something and see and hope maybe things will happen in a way that's good for you, you're testing your luck. But he doesn't want to be testing his luck here. He doesn't want to see if he can survive this 120 degree weather. So he's walking down to the Paseo del Prado. And what is this place described as, Lois?
Okay, it's a grand Victorian boulevard. Mm-hmm. So when you think of a boulevard, it's like a wider street, and a boulevard often has maybe a center part that isn't actually for a lane. It's almost like mini gardens mm-hmm. or a mini park-like area.
Right. So think of a skinny long park mm-hmm. stretched along the middle of a wide road. Okay, so it's Grand Victorian, so it's a particular style.
Right, and it also says flanked by world-renowned museums. Okay, so the word flanked here means to be at the side of someone or something.
Right. Usually when I think of something flanking, we think of, well, for myself, I think of things on both sides,
mm-hmm.
lining on both sides. And what we have here is world-renowned museums. So this world-class level, world-famous.
Yeah, that's right. This would be a very beautiful street. I think you would just enjoy taking it in, mm-hmm. maybe not at 120 degrees Fahrenheit, mm-hmm. but maybe in the early morning or late evening.
Right. So, well, we have these world-renowned museums all around you. What would you do? Well, for the author, what did he do?
Well, he purchased a general admission ticket for 14 euros and wandered the air-conditioned galleries.
14 euros is about $17.50. So that's the price you'd pay to be in an air-conditioned environment.
Mm-hmm.
Would you pay that?
Oh, most definitely. I actually think that's a very good deal.
Yes, especially when you get to see artworks from these great, great masters. We have the Velazquez's, Goya's, Rubens, and Tintoretto's all around you. Why not?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So he did this until when?
He did this until lunchtime.
Sounds like a wise man to me.
Right. So far in the morning, he's covered Plaza Mayor. He walked part of the Calle Mayor. He worked his way to Puerta del Sol and tried to get away from the heat as he was on Paseo del Prado. He worked his way into these air-conditioned museums, or at least I think it's one, because it's one general admission ticket.
That's right.
Okay, and this was until lunchtime. Now, I don't know about you. Lunchtime is sounding pretty good right now because food has always been something I'm very interested in. So I'm very curious, what does he do during lunch? Let's find out. Experience Madrid like the locals.
Experience Madrid like the locals. Madrid meals are one of the uncontested delights of any visit to the capital. Casa Labra, tucked into a side street near Seoul, has been a popular culinary destination since 1860. The family-owned tavern offers a survey of traditional local dishes, from stewed entrails to platters of cured ham. There is something here for both the adventurous and conservative traveler. After hoisting myself up from my dining chair, I decide to take part in the time-honored siesta that marks the rhythm of Spanish life. I stroll down to the Oriente Theater, where Wagner debuted his timeless opera, Rienzi, past the royal palace adorned with the weathered marble statues of five centuries of Spanish kings and into the West Park. I find the perfect napping spot under a fig tree at the foot of the Dabad Temple. Gifted by Egyptian President Gamal Abdel Nasser in 1970 to Madrid engineers for their help in controlling the flooding waters of the Nile, the 4th century BC temple stands in exquisite contrast to the steel skyscrapers, just visible beyond the trees. My eyelids flutter shut to the sound of nearby castanets.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Liz. I'm here in the studio with Lois and Campbell. And we've been talking about our travel article for the month. We're visiting Madrid, the capital of Spain. And this is day two of our three-day article. So far, we've covered different places, famous squares, plazas, and boulevards. And now we're going to look at food. We're on page 15, right in the middle of the first column. And Madrid meals are described as what, Campbell?
Well, the writer describes Madrid meals as one of the uncontested delights of any visit to the capital.
Uncontested delights. Wow. That's quite a claim, or that's quite a description.
It is. Nobody's going to argue with you. Those meals are great.
Okay, but uncontested. Maybe some of our friends are unfamiliar with that word.
It just means that no one's challenging this fact. No one is saying, hey, that's not true. Everybody's like, no, that is, yes, definitely true.
Okay, so this is basically a fancy way of saying Madrid meals is one of the best things about, you know, visiting the capital.
That's right.
Okay, the food is awesome. We have a place here. It's mentioned, line 16, Casa Labra. And it's where?
It's tucked into a side street near Seoul.
Okay. And it has been a popular culinary destination since when?
Since 1860.
Wow, so over 100 years.
No, over 150 years is incredible.
Right. Yeah. Culinary destinations, basically a really, really fancy way of saying restaurant.
Or food destination,
a place to
right?
Eat.
Right.
Yeah. Yes.
Culinary is just a really fancy adjective that basically just means involving food. Mm-hmm. And what kind of a place is it?
Well, it says it's the family-owned tavern. We don't always use the word tavern anymore. We often think of pub. That's become very popular. Mm-hmm. And so it's obviously a place to eat and drink, offers a survey of traditional local dishes.
Okay.
And so, that's kind of nice, the traditional local dishes.
Right, and it's family-owned, so family recipes are definitely something that you will sample. Now, tavern, though, what's the difference between, let's say, tavern and restaurant, Campbell?
Well, a tavern would probably serve more alcohol and more drinks, and it's a bit more of a casual environment than a restaurant.
Right. Now, these traditional local dishes, we have a bit of a description here. What kinds of stuff can we find there, Lois?
Okay, we can find stewed entrails.
Mm-hmm. What else?
And we have cured ham.
Mm-hmm.
And there, I think that's all they mention here right away for the food.
Okay, stewed entrails and cured ham.
Oh, I love cured ham.
All right, let's talk a little bit about this stewed. Basically,
okay. When something is stewed, it's cooked in water, so it's boiled in a sense, and it's kind of made into a soup. Entrails are just intestines and other organs.
Mm-hmm.
So these intestines and organs are cooked in a soup, in a stew.
Right.
I'll go with the cured ham. For sure.
So when something's stewed, it's usually cooked a little longer, and the heat is usually, you know, small heat. The fire is not like blazing.
Right.
We're not talking about this like deep fried here.
Mm-hmm.
So small heat, just enough to keep it bubbling, boiling. And we have organs. Basically, entrails are, you know, the insides, as Campbell described. And then cured ham would be, well, you know, most of us don't mind ham. And this
it's ham that was sick.
Nice.
No, ham that was salted and left to age and left oftentimes to dry a bit too.
Thank you. Thank you, Lois. And good one, Campbell. Cured normally, yes, we know it as the word for healing. When someone's sick, you know, you hope that they can get some cure. But when we're talking about ham and how we deal with meat, it's a very old way of making sure that meat lasts a little longer, and salt, air drying, and different techniques have been known, been used by different cultures to make meat last a little longer. And cured ham from Madrid, from Casa Labra, it's apparently famous. So for travelers, whether you are adventurous or conservative, you can definitely find something at Casa Labra.
Mm-hmm. And we see the address and the information for Casa Labra down there at the bottom of page 15.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like things aren't too expensive. So if you want to take a pay a visit when you're in Madrid, you can write this information down.
Right. Okay, so our writer had his meal, and we move on to the next paragraph, beginning with this first section here, after hoisting myself up from my dining chair. Okay, hoisting yourself.
Sounds like he's very heavy now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you hoist, it means you kind of have, it takes, you're lifting something, but it's taking effort. So it's kind of describing the fact that he ate a lot and he feels kind of heavy. And so he's kind of, it's taking effort for him to stand up.
So he's not really like shooting up from the chair here. It's more like, pull himself up. Okay. He makes a very important decision here.
Exactly.
What does he decide here?
Well, he decides to do something that's time-honored in this part of the world, and he's going to have his siesta.
Okay, time-honored. What does that mean?
When it's a time-honored something, it means it's something that's, it's a tradition that's been around for a long time.
Right, so we use time honor to describe tradition, rituals, mm-hmm. practices that have been going on for generations. And so siesta is basically that nap, but it's no ordinary nap. It's something that people do in parts of the world where it's very hot. And traditionally, it's just the only way to deal with the heat.
That's
you can't
right.
work mm-hmm. during that time. You even if you try, it's very uncomfortable, and taking a nap just seems reasonable. So he decides to participate in this activity. And he also describes siesta as being part of the rhythm of Spanish life.
Mm-hmm.
What a description. Okay. So where does he go, Campbell?
Well, he strolls down to the Orient Theater, where Wagner debuted his timeless opera, Rienzi.
Mm-hmm.
And then he walks past the royal palace, mm-hmm. adorned with the weathered marble statues of 5 centuries of Spanish kings.
Okay, and then into where? He ends up in the
West Park.
Yes. Wait, so he's already had his meal. It's a very hot day, and he's still able to cover all this? I'm mm-hmm. impressed.
Yeah.
I would be staggering. I wouldn't be strolling.
Maybe he did buy one of those fans.
Maybe he did. Okay. So he was looking for a place to take a nap, to have his siesta, and he still managed to squeeze in a few more mm-hmm. famous landmarks along the way. That's mm-hmm. a good way to make the most of his time. Okay. And we move to this the next paragraph, second column there. He finds the perfect napping spot where?
Yes. Who would have guessed? Under a fig tree at the foot of the Dabod Temple.
Okay, there's a temple there?
Yes, and I didn't know that.
Mm. Interesting. Okay, actually the Dabod Temple, we have a picture of that right at the bottom of page 15. And we have a little description about what's so special about this place.
Well, this temple was gifted by Egyptian President Gamal Abdel Nasser in 1970 to Madrid engineers for their help in controlling the flooding waters of the Nile.
Okay, and how old is this actual structure?
Well, it's interesting how old it is, Liz. It's the 4th century this structure is, B.C.,
okay.
And the temple stands in exquisite contrast to the steel skyscrapers just visible beyond the trees.
Mm. Wow. So
it's several thousand years
old. Yes.
Yes.
I mean, before we mentioned this temple earlier, all these other places are a couple hundred years mm-hmm. old, maybe mm-hmm. decades, hundreds, but centuries. And then now we have B.C. That's mm-hmm. really old.
Millennia.
Yes.
And that it's still in relatively good shape.
Right. And he describes it as, well, where it sits, it provides an exquisite contrast. Exquisite is a wonderful word.
Yeah, exquisite is a wonderful word. We often use that word to describe jewelry or gemstones.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that this is, I don't know how to describe it. It's spectacular.
There's details.
And there's detail to it. It's something that you often say something is exquisite because you don't ever see it anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. It's unique.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps classy.
Right.
And rather sophisticated. Mm-hmm. But what kind of contrast? What are we contrasting here?
Well, when we say something we're contrasting, we're comparing two things. And so it stands out against the steel skyscrapers just mm-hmm. visible beyond the trees. So again, the skyscrapers kind of indicate modernity and mm-hmm. modern life. But then we have something very ancient in contrast, in comparison.
Right.
And then we have something very natural, the trees.
Yes. So what a picture. That is quite a, I would say that's quite a photo moment.
Mm-hmm.
And his eyelids flutter shut to the sound of nearby castanets. And a castanet is another percussion instrument, very small, basically two little pieces, usually wood, and they're tied together in such a way, and you push them together, so there's a certain clapping sound, but it's wooden,
mm-hmm.
and it's very much part of their culture. And he's hearing that sound, background noise, and to that noise, he finds himself slowly drifting off to sleep. And that's the end of our day two. We hope you'll join us again for the final section of this 3-day article, Mad About Madrid. Hope you'll join us tomorrow. Until then, my name is Liz.
Lois.
I'm Campbell.
Saying goodbye.
Bye. Goodbye.